Hello and welcome to the Monster Mechanics Podcast, where we take creatures of myth and media and see how they can be improved. I am your host, Scott Paladin, and with me as always is the Pippin to my Mary, Zach Jakeways. What are we talking about today, Zach?
This week, we are revisiting dragons.
And unlike our previous revisiting episode, you and I didn't re-listen to our old episode this time, so...
That's right, we're going in relatively blind.
Yeah. So if we retread any territory that we did... Literally, we had that original conversation over 2 years ago now, so I think we are allowed to have forgotten what happened in it.
Yeah.
But we also are not going to do a lot of explaining about what dragons are, because you should know what dragons are. Like, I cannot believe that
shame
you would have gotten...
Shame on you if you don't.
Well, A, you should have listened to the previous episode where we talked about it, but also, like, come on, dude, they're dragons. Everybody knows what dragons are. They're big lizards. Like, sometimes they fly, sometimes they don't, sometimes they hoard gold. You know, whatever. Like, yeah.
I think back then, like, we had a much more focused agenda when we talked about dragons. Like,
oh, yeah, for sure.
We came in, like, with a list of questions about...
Yeah.
Who are dragons? Why are they hoarding gold? Why won't they share?
Yes, we had a... That was back when we had, like, this whole, like, thing that we were going to do, and then it turned out that the podcast wasn't that, and so yeah. We stopped doing it. Which is exactly, for anybody else out there thinking about making a podcast, you probably need to make about 5 or 6 episodes before you find out what it is that you're actually making.
Yeah. And for us, I think it's just having a chance to talk to each other a couple times a month.
I mean, isn't that what all podcasts are? It's just an excuse for the hosts to, like, get together and not feel guilty. They're like, we're making content. We're being productive. You know, we've got our side hustle going on.
Yeah.
Okay. So dragons, what's an angle that we have not explored that haven't seen explored with dragons? I mean, I think we've seen both versions of, like, dragons are super intelligent ancient creatures that know all the things, but then also we've seen versions where they're big dumb lizards.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen magical dragons, we've seen biological dragons. I think we did the dragon internet last time, is one of the few things I remember.
There's been dragons as metaphor for evil.
There's even been, like, dragons exist in another universe and can only instantiate here when there's lots of magic, which is the Terry Pratchett Discworld version.
Mm-hmm. And dragons fly by farting fire.
Yep. Only that one. There's an idea actually in one of the very first Pratchett books, which is that when people are in a particularly high magic field, there's an area of just extra magic in this one area, that things that they imagine become true, and then they create dragons. Okay. And I'm kind of drawn to that idea of, like, dragons aren't their own thing. That this version of dragons is one that, like, comes from people.
Mm-hmm.
It's created by the belief of the humans that live nearby.
Oh.
And that means that the dragon is kind of whatever people expect it to be. That's an interesting idea.
So some places might have, like, a protector dragon, whereas others have, like, the stereotypical dragon where they have to sacrifice the virgin to every month.
Uh-huh. And then it also explains the huge variance that you see from population to population about dragons. Like, sometimes they have wings and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they have 4 legs and wings, and sometimes they've only got 2 legs and wings. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're super huge, big enough to encircle the entire world. But then sometimes they're also, like, small enough to be, like the size of a large dog, you know? Like, there's all this variation, and they're all dragons because everybody agrees that they're dragons. But it's because, like, when you encounter one of them, ooh, I like the idea that it doesn't exist until you perceive it. Like, it exists as a superposition and a waveform. Like, it's around, but all of the information about it, you know, it could be any of those things, but it's when you perceive it that it becomes all of those things. Like the decision of how many limbs it has isn't made until you see it, and what you expect is how many it has.
So it's sort of just like this reptilian sort of waveform just waiting to occur.
It's okay. So we're imagining a world where we're going to call it the dragon field. There is a low level dragon field through the entire world.
This
sort of
like
the electromagnetic field.
Amazing low budget fantasy book. And I'm all for it.
So yeah, there's this this background dragon radiation all of the time. Mm-hmm. Everywhere you go, there's some amount of dragon at any particular moment. And some of the, because of the natural variance, I guess, or maybe there's a cause later. We can get back to that. But there are places where that dragon
it's from field, the dragon star.
There are places where the dragon field is more activated. There's more dragon there. All mm-hmm. right. And when, but it won't make an actual dragon, a dragon that can physically interact with the world, mm-hmm. Until there is someone around to perceive it.
Okay.
And then when somebody comes close to one of these places, the dragon like becomes all of the things that they expect it to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I like also, I had said that maybe it can't interact with the world. I think that may be wrong. I think it will interact in the world in ways that you wouldn't expect, because it could be all kinds of dragons until somebody perceives it. Like when you see it, you collapse the waveform and it becomes limited. But during that time that you aren't perceiving it, when you've got your back turned, it could do all of the things that any dragon could do, you know?
Interesting. So like you're hearing rumors of like all these dragon related phenomena that are just like wildly disparate. And like you hear like stories about, you know, this protector spirit in one area, and another one's like, oh no. I heard that, you know, a virgin was sacrificed there for.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, you go for a walk in the woods and you might find evidence of where a dragon has been, but then it doesn't make any sense. Like it's, you know, you've got different kinds of footsteps and different numbers of footprints, and you have trees that are knocked down, but you also have small dens that it created because it doesn't know what size, it doesn't have a size until somebody perceives it.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of those things that these people see, all of the evidence of the dragons, like colors their perception of what it is. And so it's just kind of like semi-random chance about what those people see, and as they communicate with each other, and like they craft the dragon as a culture until it starts to solidify down into one that will be consistently, because all of these people have a sort of shared idea of what the dragon would be, until they go to the next town over who has a completely different idea of what a dragon would be, and then they disagree, and that means that their dragons would be very different. Or all the worse, if like two people from two different towns see the same dragon, like I guess it splits the difference and is like halfway in between, or is kind of a mix up between them or something like that. That could be very cool.
Interesting. I do like the idea that like, I like the dragon sort of exists in two different states simultaneously.
Okay.
So that you have like these two people are experiencing completely different things at the same time, because that's just how the dragon field works, rather than like,
no. Okay. How about like this? They see and experience two different versions of the world until those people meet and those two versions of the world like collide. So like if I'm standing on one side of a clearing and I don't know that anyone else is there, and you're standing on the other side, and we see a dragon walk between us, we can both agree, and we are both correct, that like I saw a dragon that only had two legs, and you saw a dragon that had four legs, and I saw one that had wings and you saw one that didn't, and mine was evil and yours was good. And like, we are both correct. We actually saw the thing that we saw. And then that is completely true. But if the same thing happened and you and I are standing next to each other, then they can't both be true, because you and I know about each other. And like, therefore our worldview has to agree.
Interesting.
And then that's when you get the mashup or the split the difference, or you get some third option where like it now has to conform with both of our expectations, even when our expectations are contradictory. But it only has to manage that if the two of us know that the other person is observing it and can confer about it.
I like the idea that also like having to exist like or conform to the state makes the dragon really angry.
Yeah. Yeah. It really like it.
Like it's a physically uncomfortable sensation for the dragon to like accommodate these clashing egos, basically.
And it might not even be like a physically uncomfortable thing, but especially that like you and I, like if I think a dragon is evil and you think the dragon is good, and we perceive a dragon, and the dragon is like simultaneously like it's having to be both at the exact same time. It can't like it's a contradictory thing such that it basically just like it splits the difference and becomes insane. Like it doesn't, like it can't can't derive, like, it just cannot handle having that contradiction in itself and goes bonkers, because how else would you handle being both good and evil at the same time? Mm-hmm. That could be very cool.
Yeah.
I definitely like the idea that, because with the version of it where you can both perceive the same one at the same time, the story structure becomes that two people can see the same dragon, then confer with each other and have completely contradictory accounts that are both correct. And then the next time they see it, they happen to be together and it reacts differently. And that's really cool to me. That opens up some interesting story concepts.
I also love the idea of like a society that comes to understand and tries to game the system of like creating these sort of almost genie-like beneficial situations in which you have a generous dragon that bequeaths upon you its hoard and whatnot.
I think part of the issue there is, and I like this, I would like to leverage this, which is that if you know that the dragon's going to show up as your perception of the dragon, then your perceptions of the dragon stop affecting it. That like you, like the knowledge that you affect it, once you are certain of that happening, you're like, because like you end up in this sort of feedback loop, like your perceptions are crafted and are no longer truly held, and like it never jumpstarts its way into becoming a real dragon. So that means that anybody who knows the secret has to trick other people and has to like lie to them. And so you end up with people who have motivations to change the dragon by changing the minds of people around them, either by lying to them or presenting them with false evidence or just telling really good stories. Like a particularly good bard could change a whole country's idea of what dragons are and make a material difference on the world just by telling a really good story. So like a guy writes Puff the Magic Dragon, and suddenly all of the dangerous beasts that existed in the world before, like, because it happens to be a good song that has a compelling narrative to it and like communicates some stuff about dragons, a whole bunch of dragons now, the next time they're instantiated, become, you know, weed smoking, like, I don't know, happy ass dudes. I don't know. I don't really remember what Puff Magic Dragon is about, but I just associate it with drugs. So I'm assuming that they're weed based, but
yeah. weed or opium, I think.
I got to look up. Is that actually a thing? Is it really about drugs, or is it just like what everybody thinks it's about? They apparently live by the sea. Mm-hmm. And it. Yep. No, it doesn't have. I don't think it has anything to do with drugs. It's just a big friendly dragon that roars. And yeah. It's a place called Honolulu. Yeah, no, that's just a name. People just like that. They heard Puff and they thought, oh yeah, definitely drugs.
Yeah.
But yeah, but like, what's another good example of like, what's a mimetic dragon? Something that Spyro, like, you know, Spyro is a helpful little dude who just like, you know, jumps from platform to platform and like, is he nice? I forget. Maybe he hasn't.
I'm sure like Game of Thrones would have had like a huge.
Yeah. 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 But I'm sure. I think if like the retelling of dragons as like a friendly creature is could have been a direct thing by somebody saying like, oh no, like these are big and dangerous and they cause huge amounts of problem for people. So I'm going to make up a version of dragons that doesn't do that so that we can actually save lives.
How to Train Your Dragon.
Oh yeah. There you go. How to Train Your Dragon. Which, by the way, I want to praise the dragon designs in that show are fantastic, aren't they?
Oh yeah,
like really creative, like ideas of what those dragons were. At least the first two. I only saw the first two.
I only saw the first one. So.
Yeah, yeah, but the art direction in that series was fantastic. I love those designs. Mm-hmm. Although I have to take umbrage with the fact that Viking isn't a kind of person you can be; it's a job you do. So, anyway, it literally means like bandit or pirate. It's just like a thing that you would go be a Viking for a while when you're not working your crops. Like you couldn't be like, I'm a fifth generation. Like I come from the land of Vikings. Viking. It's like saying I come from the land of bakers. Like
I'm half,
like,
Viking on my mother's side.
Yeah. And then also they sounded Scottish for some reason, despite the fact that Vikings are all Scandinavian, but
yeah,
nonetheless, good series. Love their art direction. Also, was the music on that one, on that movie was really good too, if I remember correctly.
It's been a while for me.
You ever have a movie that's like not that great, but it has like that one really banging song and you're like, yes, like that song. For some reason, I'm thinking about How to Train Your Dragon, but Brave. Which has like at the very beginning of the movie, they have that song. It's called Touch the Sky. And it's a freaking banger. It's so good. It's a really, really good song. But like the rest of the movie is kind of meh. Like, it was not Pixar did not really like land that one.
I will say like that movie did have like one of the few moments where like it actually like genuinely frightened me, which was the scene where the bear like turns around and you just like get those dead looking bear eyes, and that just like holy shit. Just got that little jolt of adrenaline.
It's really interesting. I saw a very good, we're just off on a tangent now. I saw a really good breakdown of why that movie doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And it's basically that like the conflict that you set up doesn't lead up to the mom becoming a bear. Like the interpersonal, it's actually a really interesting interpersonal conflict they set up between the princess and her mom. And like, I'd love to see how that actually is resolved, like through an interpersonal conflict. But instead we just turn the mom into a bear and then have to get her unturned into a bear. And that doesn't really drive with like actually fixing any of the problems. Like it's a whole separate.
You can't solve all your problems by turning people into bears.
Exactly. And Mordu is a fantastic like design. Like it was lovely. Mm-hmm. It's a good looking movie overall. It's just that somewhere in the script editing stage, they just decided to make Brother Bear again, kind of, except this time it's the mom.
Yeah.
Maybe
they had some leftover bear models they needed to use.
I mean, the bears did look good. I mean, like it's Pixar. So like the bears look great. Yeah.
Back to
Jack. So yeah, like this reminds me of the idea that, cause I do like this. The word bear in like a lot of Germanic languages comes from a Proto-European word, or not even it means brown. It comes from the word for brown because the theory is that early Northern Europeans became very superstitious about bears and stopped using the actual word for bear because they thought that when they said it too often, bears would show up and they didn't want to do that. Basically by like saying the devil's name, he will appear. And so instead they started to call them bears, the brown ones, started calling them brown guys. And that like a whole bunch of languages lost the original name for bear and don't have it anymore.
Well, I kind of love the idea that maybe like the word dragon is kind of the same.
This is where I was angling to get us back on topic where I was like, yeah, like something about the language where just calling it by name like creates it. It's like part of the process of instantiating, like collapsing the dragon waveform is like to give it a name. That's actually a neat idea that like, yeah, like you, what's the word I want to, what's the way I want to put this? Go ahead.
Maybe like the idea is like dragon is sort of like the word we've used to replace like whatever. And it's why we don't have dragons anymore. Is because we phased out the true name.
Oh, okay. Dragons. So there was like a activation command that was the name of these things, and we started to replace it with the word dragon. Mm-hmm. The angle I was having was that having any name is important for these things to become instantiated. Okay. Like you have this broad field. We're calling it the dragon field, but maybe it's just this broad weird field. And they don't actually become true. Like they can affect the world in a lot of different ways, but like they don't become real and physical and can affect you until you have any name for it. So when, as long as it's just weird, it'll keep like having weird stuff happen in the background. Like you'll turn your back and look back around and some stuff will have moved, or there'll be footprints or something like that. Mm-hmm. But until you give it a name, it can't be real. It can't actually affect you. But like, so a community themselves will like come up with a name for it. Maybe it'll be dragon, or maybe it'll be troll, or maybe it'll be djinn or vampire or something like that. It'll be any number of different kinds of monsters. Mm-hmm. And the perception of these people based on the random weird that happens causes these things to become instantiated. And it's that the trigger point is the moment when you actually give it a name and you say, oh, this is a blank. It is a thing, rather than it just being some weird that happened to me.
Yeah, I love the ideas, or the idea of like dragon basically being the monster.
Yeah. And that we call all of these different monsters these different names, but mm-hmm. they all come from the same place. And it is that we have decided that they're different, and what those aspects are, the attributes of those of that creature. We have all decided those things, and that's what creates them that way. That could be very cool.
I also kind of love the idea that like it's kind of like a Ghostbusters situation where you're the architect of your own demise kind of thing.
Absolutely. And so like the creatures that your culture creates are the ones that sort of lurk in your cultural subconscious. And it's like what everybody's worried about. And the stories that you get that get told from place to place. And like I definitely love the idea that you have to have that moment at which it becomes named object. Names have lots and lots of power, and I love that symbolism. Mm-hmm. And like it's the moment when the brain sort of accepts it as a thing. Like you have created an agent that is responsible for this weird shit that's been happening to you. Like up until that moment, it could have been random chance. It could have been any number of different things. Like you haven't explained it. You haven't created a concrete cause behind it until the moment when you give it a name, any kind of name, just like to call it like things like it's one of those words where like moving from the original name to the brown one isn't that much of a change. It acts like the brown one would do just fine. The brown one is a name, you know, the green man is a name. There's all these things that like anything that you can call it that becomes a handle on the idea. And then when you put that handle on the idea becomes real, something that your mind can manipulate. And it's at that moment that your mind then is able to interact with the weird field and instantiate this stuff to come into an existence.
Interesting. So it's like as long as you don't acknowledge it's there, like it has no way to interact with you specifically.
Yeah. Which means that if your attention isn't drawn to the weird stuff that's going on, then you are safe. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in the world that we're talking about, ignorance is one of the greatest defenses against this supernatural objects. Like, and in fact, all of the we're getting back into other territory I think we've talked about, but all of the lies we tell children about what the way the world is a way to inoculate them against the really bad stuff. Like telling them about Santa makes Santa real for them because their minds are able to interact with the weird field, and they will get presents on Christmas Eve because they know about Santa. Santa is real, and so he is able to affect them in a way that he is not able to affect adults who know for a fact he isn't real.
From kind of like a horror storytelling point, I kind of have a idea of like, like, suppose you get like two towns, which is whatever, that has traveled between them through like this haunted forest or whatever.
Yeah.
And like the tradition is that to pass through this forest, you have to blindfold yourself.
Yes.
And travelers like passing through the forest blindfolded, like hear horrible noises and whatever, and like feel presence, but like as long as they don't see it and acknowledge it, or give it a name, they're able to pass through unharmed.
Yeah. But like the moment that you anybody who is like inquisitive and investigative and like starts trying to figure it out, like unleashes unholy problems for both towns because they instantiate this problem into an actual creature that can do harm to them. And that both of these populations have figured out that no, the best thing to do is just like leave it alone. Like,
so all their boogeyman stories happen to involve inquisitive little boys like coming to horrible ends.
Yeah, basically.
They couldn't just leave well enough alone.
Yeah. The watchwords for them are leave well enough alone. Just leave it. Don't ask questions that you don't want the answers to, you know, because those answers can be in this world very, very dangerous. That's very cool.
I like that.
Yeah. And that explains, I mean, like, I do love the idea that both in the world where before those towns have figured out that they can't name the creatures, when they're first encountering what's going on here, they have wildly different ideas about what's happening. You know, one side thinks it's the fairies who are like stealing people away and are like these otherworldly beautiful beings. And the other side is convinced that it's trolls, you know, that it is creatures that are huge and ugly and tear you apart And both sides are completely true. Mm-hmm. Just is because that's the way that they have perceived these things to be to happen. And then they get into arguments. Whenever these groups of people meet up, they're like getting arguments about which one's true. And they each point to evidence that supports their side. But it happens to be true for whichever side gets it. I like that.
So do you have to have a name for it in its presence? Or is like experiencing it and then going elsewhere and then telling stories about it enough to create it?
So, yeah, okay, so it cannot have a presence if you don't name it. So you have to like have a name for this mm-hmm. thing for it to exist at all. So if you go someplace, experience some weird and then you name it, but you're gone by the time you walk away and you're like, man, that was really weird. Maybe that was a monster. Maybe that was a troll or something like that. You're now far away from the concentration part of the field. It doesn't exist while you're there. Mm-hmm. You talk to somebody at the tavern and say, man, I encountered a troll the other day. And you tell them this great story about, you know, nearly escaping the troll. And then that guy goes back to the area you created because you've given him the name, because you created a name and put it in his mind. The troll now exists for him. And when he comes the other way, he's going to encounter it, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like when you went through the first time and you didn't realize anything was going on, you only kind of created it. In fact, maybe they don't affect the world at all until they've got a name. So like what happened to you the first time was something completely mundane. You saw a shadow in the forest and it was actually like a tree stump, you know, and your mind was playing tricks on you. And so you like applied your imagination to it and thought that it was something more. And you got freaked out. Maybe you didn't even really believe something was going on, but like you're a storyteller, you like to tell stuff. So you like you talk about it. And then like in creating the story, you make it real to the other people. And then he goes through, sees it actually happens to him. And now you've had your original belief that you just kind of made up reinforced. You're like, well, look, that guy got his ass torn off. And
as trolls do,
he tore his butt clean off. And now he has no butt. And because of that, I know that trolls exist, even though I was the one who made them up to begin with. Mm-hmm. That would be very cool.
Yeah. Sorry about that. My dog was digging somewhere through the couch.
That's fine. I've said before, and I'll say again, like people like the dog noises that happen in the background. I've never had anybody complain. Although I don't know if you've noticed, or you probably wouldn't know, we don't have outtakes anymore. We have the stuff we talk about before we make the actual episode, but almost to a broad degree, I just leave everything in now.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. Like, it's mostly just us bullshit. Like, I'm going to leave that whole thing in. As I've become a more of an editor, I edit less and less over time. Like, I leave more and more crap in because it's just about confidence at this point.
Yeah.
How far are we into this? Because we've like created a whole worldview of this whole thing. And like to the point where everything could be answered by the that we've come up with.
That is true. Yeah.
We just hit the 30-minute mark, which means we're a little bit time short, which is okay.
Yeah.
We can always have a slightly shorter episode. But is there anything else that we want to talk about in this realm of the like imagined drag? Oh, God's imagined dragons.
Oh, no. Well, God. Time to throw the episode away.
Oh, God damn it. Okay. Well, that's it. We're done. Bye.
Until next time.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Monster Mechanics. Monster Mechanics is produced and edited by me, Scott Paladin, and hosted by myself and my best friend, Zach Jakeways. All of the ideas generated during this podcast are released under a Do What the F*** You Want public license.